The Nature and Causes of Apostasy, John Owen, Chapter 13, continued. There are some, and of them not just a few, all whose religion consists in going to church, in abiding there during the celebration of that sort of worship which they approve of. With this they satisfy their consciences as to all that they have to do with God, especially if they are admitted to a participation of the sacraments and the appointed seasons. In many others, it is to be feared, content themselves with a bare hearing of the word preached, and treat their consciences into a quietness and security by this. Otherwise it were impossible that, among so great multitudes as crowd after the preaching of the word, so few should be brought over to sincere and universal obedience. But I intend those in particular who make a profession of giving themselves up to gospel obedience, and are thereon made partakers of all gospel privileges according to the rule. Let them take heed that they do not too much rest in, nor too much trust to these outward things. For so they may do in a number of ways to their disadvantage. 1. Men may in this deceive themselves by spiritual gifts, which may be reckoned in the first place among the privileges of the church. Some rest in the gifts of others, and the satisfaction they receive by it. For by the use and exercise of them, men's affections may be greatly moved. It's also temporary faith, and evident joy be greatly excited. The things it is to be feared, some live on, without further care after a spring of living water in themselves. Others may rest in their own spiritual gifts, their light, knowledge, ability to pray or speak of the things of God. But it is the design of the apostle in the context before insisted on to declare that the most eminent spiritual gifts with all their effects either in the souls or lives of them who are made partakers of them, or in the church for edification, will not secure any persons from total apostasy. So also, some shall be utterly rejected at the last day, who were able to plead their prophesying and casting out devils in the name of Christ, and that in his name they had done many wonderful works, Matthew 7:22-23. And therefore, when his disciples who were true, but as yet weak believers were greatly affected, and it may be lifted up with the success they have had in casting out devils in his name, he recalls them from any confidence in this, as to their eternal concern, to a trust in God's free electing grace with the fruits of it, Luke 10:20. And the reason of this is because these gifts have no inseparable relation to any of the special and peculiar causes of salvation. That which seems to be of any difficulty is that they are a special fruit of the mediation of Christ, purchased by his death, given into his power upon his resurrection, and first communicated on his ascension. But all that follows from hence is that they are good and holy in themselves, and designed to good and holy ends or uses, namely, the confirmation of the gospel and edification of the church. But it does not thence follow that they are saving to them that receive them, unless they are accompanied with special grace towards them, and holy obedience in them, from both which they are separable. It is therefore greatly incumbent on all those who have received any spiritual gifts to take care they be enlivened and enacted by special grace. For, if they are not careful, they will give them a pretense and apprehension of what they have not, and set a greater luster upon what they have than it deserves. For in their actings, because the objects of them are spiritual and heavenly things, the same with that of special grace, men are apt to suppose that grace is exercised, when it may be far from them. And as to the profession that men make, these gifts will set it off with such beauty as shall render it very acceptable to others, and very well pleasing to themselves. Both these tend evidently to the ruin of the souls of men, if not wisely managed and improved. Therefore, by the way, to help us to a right judgment in this manner, we may observe one certain difference between the operations of spiritual gifts, which are solitarily so on the one hand, and saving grace on the other. Gifts have their special works which they are confined to, according as their special nature is in them, to act vigorously. Out of them, to influence not the soul at all, but the work of saving grace is universal, equally respecting all times, occasions, seasons, and duties. And although it may be acted more eminently at one time than another, in one instance of duty than another, yet it enlivens and disposes the heart alike to all obedience. Whether the difference it is between spiritual gifts and saving grace is also concerning their whole nature and use, I shall, God assisting, treat at large in another discourse. At present, maintain only this caution, to men countenance not themselves by them, nor resolve a peace, or rather, carnal security, into their exercise, under real spiritual decays of grace and obedience. Number 2. Too high an estimate of any peculiar way of worship is apt to entice the minds of some into hurtful confidence in these things, having an apprehension that they alone have attained to the right way of gospel worship and the administration of its ordinances, and that perhaps on such accounts as, when they are eminently deceived, they begin first greatly to value themselves, and then to despise all others, and if they can, to persecute them. This insensibly works them into a trust in that which they esteem so excellent, and that, to an open neglect of things of a greater weight and moment. So is it not unusual to see persons who are under the power of some singular opinion and practice and religion to make that one thing almost their whole business, the measure of other things and persons, the rule of communion and of all sincere love, to value and esteem themselves and others according to their embracing or not embracing of that opinion. There is here something of that which God complains of in the prophet Isaiah 65, verse 5. And it were to be wished that such principles and practices were not visibly accompanied with a decay of love, humility, meekness, and self-diffidence, condescension and zeal and other things. Seen, were it so, let men's outward profession be what it will, the plague of apostasy is begun. Therefore, although we ought greatly to prize and to endeavor after the true order of the Church of Christ, the purity of worship and regular administration of ordinances, yet let us take heed that we do not prize ourselves too much on what we have attained. For, if we do so, we shall be very apt to countenance ourselves and other neglects thereby, which will certainly bring us into a spiritual sickness and declension. In one way or other, there is an undue confidence placed in these outward privileges, when either any or all of the things ensuing are found among us. These would be 1. A neglect of private spiritual duties. This ruinous event never falls out amongst professors, but it proceeds either from an over-fullness of the world and its occasions, or the prevalency of some predominant lust, or a sinful resting in, or trusting to the duties of public worship. When all these concur, unless God effectually awaken the soul, it is in a perishing condition. In particular, when men are satisfied as to religious worship, with that which is public or in communion with others, so as to countenance themselves in a neglect of the duties of their private retirements, they're in the high road to apostasy. Number 2. The indulgence of any private lust, to the satisfaction of the flesh. This great defect in the power of godliness is frequently countenanced by strictness in the form of it. And a great effect it is of the deceitfulness of sin, when it can delude the minds of men to justify themselves in any one sin, with the names, titles, reputation and privileges of the church, or the ordinances in which they are made partakers. And the secret efficacy of this deceit is not easy to be detected. Number 3. It is so also when a loose and careless frame in our walking is indulged unto on the same account. It is hard indeed to know directly whence this is come to pass, that so many professors of the gospel should give of themselves to a negligent and careless walk, but that it is so come to pass is certain. There is no truth more acknowledged than that a strict and close walk with God, and attendance to it on all occasions with diligence and circumspection, with a continual conscientious fear of sin, is indispensably required to acceptable evangelical obedience or holiness. Yet, so it is, do many professors walk with that looseness and carelessness, adventurous boldness with respect to the occasions of sinning, dead liberty or rather licentiousness of conversation, as are utterly inconsistent with it. As there are many causes of this, so I fear this may be one among them, that they too much satisfy themselves with their interest in the church and its privileges, and with their observance of public worship, and the ordinances of it, according to their respective stations and capacities. Therefore, the sum of this direction is, that, if we would be preserved from the prevalency of the present apostasy, we must have a strict regard to our principles and practices with respect to the privileges of the church and ordinances of gospel worship. If we neglect or despise them, we cast off the yoke of Christ and have no ground to look for His acceptance of us or concern in us. It is but folly for them to pretend a hope in His mercy, who defy His authority. And if, on the other hand, we so rest in Him as to countenance ourselves in any of the evils mentioned, we shall succeed into the room who, under the name and pretense of the church and its privileges, fell into an open apostasy from Christ and the gospel, for the same causes will produce the same effect in us as they did in them. There is a middle way between these extremes, which whoever is guided into will find rest and peace to their souls. This is no other but a humble, careful, conscientious improvement of all to their proper ends. And it may not be amiss to name some of those things in which we may know whether our hearts are upright and rightly disposed in the use of gospel ordinances. And we may use these to judge ourselves. First, if our hearts are bettered by them, are humbled for it, if they are not, their end, with respect to us, is to excite and put forth all grace into exercise. And therefore we find faith and love and delight in God, longing after an increase of grace and holiness, with a detestation of sin, fruitfulness in good works, and all duties of obedience, joy in spiritual things, self-abasement, and admiration of grace, stirred up in us by them, our hearts need not condemn us to lack of sincerity in these duties, though we are sensible of many weaknesses and imperfections. And whereas through the power of corruption and temptation, through the weakness of the flesh, and prevalency of unbelief, we come sometimes short of a sensible experience of this effect on our souls by and under them, there may yet remain a relieving evidence of some sincerity in what we do, and this is, rejecting all other pretenses and prejudices, we charge ourselves alone with our own unprofitableness, and be humbled in a sense of it. Lack of this has been the reason why some have rejected the ordinances of the gospel as dead and useless, and others have grown formal, careless, and barren under the enjoyment of them. When all veils and coverings shall be taken away and destroyed, these things will appear to be the fruits of pride and of the deceitfulness of sin. Number 2. It is so when, in the dispensation of the ordinances, spiritual things are realized and made near to us. When in the preaching of the word we find Jesus Christ evidently set forth, crucified before our eyes. Galatians 3:1. When the form of the things delivered is brought on our minds. Romans 6:17. When we do, as it were, fill and handle the word of life, and the things hoped for have some kind of subsistence given them in our souls. Is Hebrews 11:1. And are we exercised in a due manner in this part of our obedience? To this purpose our apostle discourses in Romans 10:6-9, the word Esprit, and other ordinances do not direct us to things afar off, but bring the Lord Christ with all of the benefits of his mediation into our hearts. But if we content ourselves with empty light, with unaffecting notions of spiritual things, if we rest satisfied with the outward performance of our own duty and that of other men, we have just cause to fear that our hearts are not right in the sight of God in this manner. Number 3. When we find that a conscientious attendance on all the ordinances of instituted worship quickens our diligence and watchfulness to all other duties of obedience that are required of us, we are conversant in them in a due manner. When under a pretense of them and a mistaken satisfaction in them, men countenance themselves in the neglect of other duties, a way is made for further apostasy from holiness has been declared. Therefore, there can be no greater evidence of our due attendance to them than when we are excited, quickened, enlarged, and confirmed by them to and in all the ways of universal obedience. Those, therefore, who most conscientiously make use of church privileges and gospel ordinances are they whose hearts are most engaged to all other duties by them. Lastly, it is an evidence of the same importance when we have that experience of Christ and his grace in the administration of gospel ordinances according to his will, is that we are strengthened by them to suffer for him and them when we are called to it. The time will come when neither mere light and conviction of truth nor the gifts of the ministry will secure men to their profession, but he who has tasted how gracious Christ is in the ways of his appointment will not easily be removed from his resolution of following him wherever he goes. Fourthly, take heed of the infection of national vices. What I intend by this has been before declared, and his caution is most necessary when they are most prevalent among any people, for commonness will take off a sense of their guilt, and countenance will insensibly take away shame. Besides, when some go out to an open excess, others are apt to justify themselves in vain practices and sinful miscarriages, because they rise not up to the same height of provocation with them. This makes lesser vanities and habits, attires, pleasures, misspending of time, in talking houses, excess in eating and drinking, corrupt communication, and careless boldness in common converse, in which persons tread in the steps, and sometimes on the very heels of the predominant sins of the place and age that so abound among us. Some openly show what they have a mind to be at, if they dare, and that it is more reputation and the power of convictions and the love of gospel holiness that restrains them from running forth into the same excess of riot with others. Israel of old dwelt alone, and was not reckoned among the nations, Numbers 23:9, and the remnant of Jacob is to be so in the midst, in the bowels of many people, is to be a blessing unto them, Micah 5:7, not to be corrupted by them. Professors will so immerse themselves into the body of the people as insensibly to learn their manners. They'll be carried down the stream with them into perdition, and the danger of this is beyond what most men are aware. Grace was but sparingly administered to the community of the people under the Old Testament. And therefore, after the giving of the law, God would not trust them to live among other people, no other people to live among them. It's knowing how unable they were to withstand the temptations of conformity to them. Hereon, he appointed that all the nations should be utterly extirpated, where they were to inhabit, that they should not learn their customs. Leviticus 18:30, the neglect of this wisdom of God, the transgression of his will in this, by mixing themselves with other nations and learning their manners, was that which proved their ruin. Under the gospel there is a more plentiful effusion of the Spirit. God now entrusts all that are called to the obedience of it to live in the midst of all nations under heaven. Yet, he so does it as to warn them of their danger by it, and to require them to stand on their guard in this continually. This is that part of true religion, which the Apostle James calls the keeping of ourselves unspotted from the world. Chapter 1, verse 27. Most men think it is enough that no more can be required of them, nor expected from them, than that they wallow not in the mire and pollutions of it. If their practice be free from actual open sins, they do not care what spots of a worldly conversation are on them, but they know not what will be the end of this. It may be, it will be said, that unless we do conform ourselves in some things to the customs that are prevalent among us, as in habit, in fashion, in way of conversation, we shall be despised in the world, and neither we nor ours be of any regard. But I answer, first, that I am not contending about small things, nor prescribing modes of attire, or manner of deportment to any. There is none that is more despised a placing of religion in clothes and gestures and a refusal of civil and just respects than I do, nor have I any severity in my thoughts against the distinction in these things among persons, according to their degrees and conditions in the world, though apparently there be an excess in all sorts in this. But that which I intend is a compliance with the world, in no things which border on and make some kind of representation of the predominant vices of the place and age in which we live. And if you think, you shall be despised, if you come behind the rest of your rank and quality in the world in these things, still you will be so unless you come up to them in all abominations, 1 Peter 4, verses 3 and 4. And whether it be fit to relinquish God and Christ and the gospel, all holiness and morality, to have the friendships of the world judge you. And number 2, be sure to outgo them in fixed honesty, kindness, benignity, usefulness, meekness, moderation of spirit, charity, bowels of compassion, readiness to help and relieve all men according to your power. And you will quickly find, even in this world, how little you are concerned in that contempt of the vilest part of mankind in which you seem to be afraid. Fifthly, carefully avoid all those miscarriages of professors which alienate the minds of men from the gospel and countenance them in the contempt of the profession of it. Some of them we have mentioned before, and many of the like nature might be added to them. It's a scandalous profligate lives of those in general who are called Christians. Give that offense to Jews, Mohammedans, and Gentiles, all the world over, that hardens them to a contempt and detestation of Christianity, and has brought the whole manner of religion in the world to force and the sword. So the miscarriages of the strictest sort of professors greatly countenance others in their dislike of an enmity against the power of godliness which they profess. And so far as we continue in them, we have a share in the guilt of the present defection. Not to insist on particulars of things of this nature that are charged on them may be reduced to 3 heads. 1. Lack of love and unity among themselves. 2. Lack of usefulness and kindness towards all. 3. Spiritual pride and censoriousness, a rash judging of other men. These are the things which are commonly charged on some professors. And although it may be there are but few who are guilty of all or any of these things, at least not as they are charged and reproached by others, yet they may all learn what in a special manner to avoid, that they give no advantage to those who seek for it, and would be glad of it. It is our duty by a watchful holy conversation in all things, to put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, and so universally to approve our sincerity to God and men, and that, whereas we are, or may be at any time evil spoken of as evildoers, they may be ashamed beholding our good conversation in Christ, and glorify God in the day of visitation. This is a law that we have brought ourselves under, not to fret and fume, and in our minds seek for revenge when we are traduced and evil spoken of, but by patient continuance and well-doing, to overcome all the evil that the malice of hell or the world can cast upon us. And if we do not like this law and rule, we'd best relinquish our Christian profession, for it is indispensably required of all the disciples of Jesus Christ, and he whose heart is confirmed by grace to do well, while he is evil spoken of, will find such present satisfaction in a sense of his acceptance with Christ, as to make him say, "This yoke is easy, and this burden is light." Especially ought we carefully to avoid the things mentioned and appearances of them, in which public offense is taken, and advantage made by evil men to countenance themselves and their sins. You are but few to whom these things are communicated, and so may judge that all your care in and about them will be of little significance to put any stop to the general declension from gospel holiness. But it is hoped that all others are warned in the same manner, yea, and more effectually than you are. However, every vessel must stand on its own bottom. The just shall live by his own faith. Every one of us shall give an account of himself to God, and no more is required of you but your own personal duty. It is true, you cannot put an end to those differences and divisions, that luck of love and agreement that is among professors, but you may take care that the guilt of none of these things may be justly charged on you. Love to the saints without dissimulation, readiness to bear in meekness with different apprehensions and palpable misapprehensions, non-entrenching on the foundation, freedom from imposing your sentiments on those who cannot receive them, and from judging rashly on supposed failures, readiness for universal communion in all religious duties, all that love the Lord Jesus Christ in sincerity, as they are our duties, as they are some of the principal ways in which we may truly represent the Lord Christ and the doctrine of the gospel to others. So, they will disarm Satan and the world of a great engine in which they work no small mischief to the whole interest of religion. Again, were all professors meek, quiet, peaceable in their societies and among their neighbors, sober, temperate, humble in their personal conversation in the world, useful, kind, benign, condescending towards all, cheerful in trials and afflictions, always rejoicing in the Lord, men not given up to a reprobate sense, men who are so are not to be regarded, would at length be so far from taking offense at them as to judge that they should not know what to do without them, and be one to endeavor a conformity to them. In like manner, were those rules more diligently attended to which are prescribed to all believers, as to their conversation in this world, it would be of no small advantage to religion, in honesty, sincerity, uprightness, and all the occasions of life, and the whole converse of professors in the world, shine more brightly, and give more evidences of themselves than at present among many they seem to do. It would undoubtedly turn to the unspeakable advantage of religion, And lastly, for that judging or condemning of others in which they are so provoked, there is but one way in which it may be done so as to give no just offense, and this is in our lives. The practice of holiness judges all unholy persons in their own breasts, and if they are provoked by it, there is nothing in it but a new aggravation of their own sin and impiety, the nature and causes of apostasy. John Owen.